And welcome back to the Livingston Parish News Weekly Show, a podcast brought to you by the Livingston Parish News. My name is McHugh David, publisher and editor of the news, and we have this lovely lady back in the booth. She is in a runoff. We're going to let her take a second to introduce herself. Thanks for taking the time this morning to stop by again and say hello to us and the viewers. So please introduce yourself.
Well, thanks, McHugh. It's great to be here again. And my name is Liz Merle, and I'm running for Attorney General. And I'm currently the Solicitor General in the Attorney General's office. So I've been doing a lot of work there for the last 8 years.
Sure. And if you did not watch the podcast you and I did back in September before the primary, recommend you go check that out. We did talk a lot about what a Solicitor General does, but you know, the real bare bones of it is you represent the legal interest of the people.
Right.
And so right now you've got two cases. We discussed them back in the other podcast. Do want to update folks, and maybe if people are watching you for the first time, they'll kind of get an idea of what you do. But I know that there is one, there's an internet-based one and a FEMA one. So let's talk about the FEMA one first. That's the one you brought up.
Sure. So, you know, the FEMA case is about Risk 2.0, which is the flood insurance program that the national government, that the government provides nationally to people who are in special flood zones, which are created by FEMA. So they draw these maps and they kind of put you into a special zone that requires you to have flood insurance. But generally you can't buy that insurance because it's in a special flood hazard area that they created. So you have to buy it from the federal government. And what they've done with this new program, which they call Equity in Action, is create extremely inequitable rates. And then they've jacked them up. They've run up the rates on people, and it's causing people to actually lose their homes in some cases because they can't pay their mortgages or they can't pay for that flood insurance. And it has all kinds of negative consequences for people. And so we brought a lawsuit with 43 parishes and 10 states. And we are continuing to fight that fight. We had a hearing in federal court a few weeks ago in front of Judge Darrell Papillon in New Orleans. And that was a really interesting day. But, you know, we really tried to put some of the parish presidents ahead up on the stand so that they could convey to the judge just how harmful this program is. And hopefully he's going to block it.
Sure. And so, you know, again, as we discussed before you started explaining that case, you know, trying to represent the interest of the people legally who are struggling. I mean, insurance is a big deal, especially in South Louisiana. Between homeowners, which has been a problem since Ida, well, really before that, and then, of course, flood insurance, back and forth. So the other case that y'all are working right now deals with privacy, I believe.
Right. Well, and the First Amendment. So that case, we call it the big tech collusion case because it involves the federal government coercing and then colluding with the big tech platforms. That would be Twitter and Facebook and Instagram, but predominantly Facebook and Twitter, to censor people's speech. And we found through a lot of the documents that we obtained in the beginning in this lawsuit that the government was putting very, very coercive, threatening statements in email and telling these platforms that they should take down speech that we knew was, that we now know was true and protected by the First Amendment. So, you know, we really don't want to see, the government should never be violating our First Amendment rights. So we should start with that. This was an extremely massive enterprise. It carried through to the Department of Homeland Security. It affected our elections. It affected our ability to talk about issues during COVID and not have that speech censored by the government. It affected our ability to criticize government, which is really one of the most foundational aspects of the First Amendment, is your right to criticize the government. So it is an extremely threatening enterprise put in place and institutionalized by this administration. We got an injunction that said stop. Then we went to they appealed that to the United States Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals. That's the federal court that sits in New Orleans, but it covers all three states, Mississippi, Texas, and Louisiana. So when you're in federal court, that's where your appeals go. So they appealed to the Fifth Circuit, and the Fifth Circuit affirmed that judgment not once, but twice. And so now they've taken it up to the United States Supreme Court and appealed there, and that court put a temporary hold on the order you know, as a practical matter, the government still isn't supposed to violate your First Amendment rights. So even though there's a temporary hold on the order, the government is not permitted to violate people's First Amendment rights from the jump. So we will be up there in the United States Supreme Court in oral argument on that case, probably in the early spring.
And that could possibly be a subordinate of yours that would be handling that at that point, should you win in a runoff. And, you know, amid all of this, you are running a campaign. Outside of the cloudy weather, it's kind of a nice, it's a lot better to get out there, I'm sure, in campaign now than it was back in September. Very cold out there today. But going over some of these statistics real quick, you pull 45% of the vote statewide. That's got to make you feel pretty confident about this, yes or no?
You know, that the primary was one race and this is a new race. I mean, I think that we can't take anything for granted. What we need is for people to go back out again and vote. You know,
sure.
It's the most important thing.
47.1% turnout. However, it was 36.3% for your race, which is interesting. I guess typically some people just don't press the button, I guess, if they don't know anything about it. So Democrat Lindsey Cheek is your opponent, pulling 23% of the vote. But two other Republicans in the race, John Stefanski and Marty Mailey, pulled 24% together. So, you know, but like you said, it's a new race and turnout, reason I brought that up, tends to be an issue. So two questions here. First and foremost, how are you changing your approach, especially considering it's a very protracted period that you have to campaign between these two dates as opposed to qualifying in the primary? And the second question, of course, is how are you trying to motivate people? Like you said, you need to get people to go out and vote. And historically speaking, they don't in a runoff, especially as we discussed before we got started, Jeff Landry won outright. So there's no gubernatorial candidate on the ballot. So again, two questions. How have you adjusted your campaign approach? And then how are you trying to get people out to the polls?
Well, really, it's, you know, kind of the same mission, right, for both those questions. It's get people to recognize how important the stakes are right now. And, you know, I think it just couldn't be a more important time for the state of Louisiana. We need leadership that is willing to work together to advance the interests of our state and our people and to protect our, that will protect our constitutional rights. I have a proven track record of doing that. You know, I always like to emphasize as well the importance of the Treasurer's Office and the Secretary of State's Office, because I defend them in a lot of lawsuits. And I think that it is important. Safe and free elections hang in the balance in the Secretary of State's office. Protecting our Treasury from some of the policies that have been imposed by the Biden administration that open up, I think, some very ill-defined investment strategies that can hurt us and hurt the Treasury is also something that is an important role of the Treasurer. He's in charge of investing all the money that's in the Treasury. So, you know, I think that those races, all of our races, all three of our races are extraordinarily important. And I hope that people will get the message and go back out and vote again. We have local races that are also very important to people. So that may drive some voter turnout. And we're trying to kind of focus on where we can, more of a grassroots fight again. Going into the primary, I really needed to reach a lot of people in our state. Going into this race, I've got to kind of target, would like the, all the people who voted for me the first time to go back out and vote again. But I hope that everyone will go vote and recognize what's at stake in these elections.
Sure. And real quick, I forgot to mention, here in Livingston Parish, you pulled 60% on a 41.7% turnout. So you did bring up, it's still a relatively packed ballot. As you said, Secretary of State runoff as well as Treasurer runoff are on the ballot. There are two parish council runoffs, four constitutional amendments. This feels like Sesame Street. And then a tax renewal for the library. So the first time around when you came, we asked you a lot of questions about you and about your job. But after you've been through an entire campaign slate and you've been through one election, what are some things that have kind of adjusted your mindset towards running for this office? I mean, have you heard anything different, or did you feel confident in your messaging? You know, as you talk to people, you were basically getting the feedback of you're doing great. You're doing the right thing.
You know, I think that people care about their economic, they want to be safe in their homes. And I think that's something that transcends political affiliation. We all want to feel safe when we leave our house, and we want to be safe in our homes. So, you know, that is my first priority, is to join with our other leadership in the House and in the and the other elected offices, statewide elected offices, when we move forward, probably with a special session on crime. You know, we've got to basically reinstill accountability in our state, where people who violate the law are held accountable for that, for those violations. And then that will allow people to turn their attention toward their economic livelihood. And I think that's another very, very important thing to people. They want to be able to take care of their families.
Sure.
And so they want to be economically competitive, and they want to, that means we need to be thinking about how to make Louisiana more economically competitive. We want to provide good jobs, well-paying jobs, and we want our kids and our grandchildren to want to stay here. So, you know, I think we all share, I know that all of the elected officials or people running for office seem to share that vision for our state. How we get there is part of the process. And it's part of the debate that we have in the legislature when we go through bills and people have new ideas that they try to put into law. I intend to be, you know, part of that process because I will always have the best interests of our state and people in my heart. And I've got four sons who I want to see thrive and start families here in Louisiana so that they can be close to me as well. So I share that same commitment.
Sure. So you already brought something up that I was going to talk about, which is as the primary election got closer to its date, things started to become a little more clear, and especially immediately after when Governor-elect Landry was declared the winner, there was the discussion of the special section with regard to criminal justice. How, from your new office, should you be elected, would you like to participate in that?
You know, I think that the first thing we need to do is look at rolling back some of the policies that were put in place a few years ago that just simply haven't produced the results that were promised. They have made our communities less safe, and we need to take a good hard look at what those policies have done and what our statistics look like. There has to be accountability for violent crime in our communities. And I think that when we show the criminals that we are willing to hold them accountable and that we are going to take back our streets and our communities, then I think some of the crime will roll back immediately. If it's not easy for them, then they will go find places to commit crimes where it's easier. So, you know, I think that's kind of the first level of taking back our communities and making sure that they are safe. There's another level beyond that where we have to take a harder look at facilities, our ability to house and provide services so that we can have rehabilitation and actually, you know, get people back into the community in a meaningful way. Some criminals need to stay in jail for a long, long time and maybe for life. But the truth is we have an enormous number of people that are in that system, and the objective is to get them back, to rehabilitate and to put them back into community in a way that is productive and not harmful to the community as a whole. So, you know, we really do have to take a look at what those policies are so that we can integrate people back into the community and not have them reoffend.
Sure. So would you imagine yourself as you get into this special session, and you'll excuse me, I'm a little ignorant on, you know, historically what the participation would be, but from your standpoint as an AG, would you be an active participant or more of a consultant, maybe somebody that testifies, maybe all three?
All three. I think it's all three. So, you know, certainly from a constitutional standpoint, if I see legislation drafted that is that I believe is constitutionally vulnerable, then I think it is my duty to work with the legislature to get it kind of within the right constitutional boundaries. The next level then is policy. As long as it's constitutional, now it's a decision for the legislature about whether it is a good idea, not whether it's a constitutional idea at that second level, but whether it's a good idea. And so, you know, I may have an opinion on that. And I think that we need to take, again, a hard look at the realities of some of these policies. We see other states that have implemented some of the policies and are in a far worse state than we are. So I think we can see what the outcome is of some of these policies that reduce accountability. And then we have to take a good hard look at ourselves and see whether we are providing enough programming to reduce the recidivism rate. Drugs are a huge problem in our community. We've got to address the drug problem. It increases violent crime. You know, I've heard people say that drug crimes aren't violent crimes. That I do not agree with that at all. Drug crimes absolutely breed violent crime. They are driven by violent criminals, frequently by cartels. And so they are, and then they cause people to commit violent crimes. So, you know, we can't just treat those crimes as nonviolent crimes. They do have victims, and sometimes they actually cause, you know, death to someone because they were sold a pill, for example, and it causes them to overdose and die. So we've seen that happen in our communities where we've lost young people who should be here with us today.
Sure. A lot of problems these days with fentanyl,
yes,
which is very immediately dangerous at not a high concentration at all. Unfortunately, you know, working through the news, you start learning a little bit more about that than you care to know. But it is important for people to understand that, especially these days, it's true. There's a lot of underlying violence that goes along with drug use, especially sort of uncontrolled drug use. So moving past that, obviously, you'll be an active participant in that special session and wearing a lot of different hats, so you'll be very busy. You did go forward and talk about economic opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in a lot of cases, that would be solved during a normal session. When you think about that coming up this next spring, first and foremost, what are you hopeful to see? And second, how would you like to participate in making that a reality?
Well, you know, I think that again, that's one that it more than probably in the area involving crime. Is not as direct a role for the Attorney General. I mean, obviously, we always have the job to make sure that the policies meet constitutional scrutiny. And when it comes to economic policy, you know, there is some law that is relevant, and I'll be looking at those bills for that purpose. But, you know, I'm just like everybody else. I want our state to be competitive again. We have Texas, Arkansas, Oklahoma, and Mississippi all around us, and even Alabama sort of adjacent to that. All these states around us are doing much better than we are in competing for new business and industry, investing in their states. And so we've got to take a look at what are we not doing that they're doing, and how can we adopt, you know, I mean, if they're doing well, then we can look at what policies they've adopted that facilitated that. So some of those things just may not be that hard. But we have to look at ourselves, because we need to improve our economic competitiveness if we want to have the job base that will keep our kids here.
So really trying to secure opportunity for the next generation, generations
right
after that.
That's right.
And, you know, part of that is safety, as we discussed mm-hmm earlier. So as you head into, let's talk about the race itself for just a second, because as you head into early voting starts this Friday, we'll talk more about that towards the end of the podcast as to why, hint, it's Veterans Day, the weekend after. But, you know, it's already here. Quick turnaround. But this time it is you versus one other person. It's not a field. When you are talking to potential constituents, folks who would vote for you, why you? Has your pitch changed from the primary? Has it adapted, evolved, or is it still much of the same?
Well, I think that everything that I stand for hasn't changed in terms of, you know, we're pitch. It's the same pitch. People need to go vote. You know, and I would say that one of the most important ways that we can honor our veterans on Veterans Day is by having voted going into Veterans Day or voting the next day. I mean, that they fought to protect our freedoms. The least that we can do is go vote and carry out what is our greatest right under the Constitution, and it is the right to vote. So I think that, you know, we can honor them by carrying out, exercising the franchise that they fought to protect. And so I think that, you know, I want to thank all of our veterans, because I'm grateful for the sacrifice that they've made for us. And I think the least that we can do is go show we care and vote.
So, interesting question about the office and the office of the Attorney General, and of course everyone underneath, which right now includes you. You are one among them. One of the things I've seen as you've campaigned, however you want to put it, is that there are a lot of people. I wouldn't say concerned. Obviously, plenty of people voted for you, but they're, you know, who's going to replace you as Solicitor General? And we talked about this briefly during the first one, but I wanted to kind of open up this question now that it's just you and one other person. Right now, the results look good in your favor. So as you're sitting there thinking about that with all these other things going on, you know, I asked you just right off the cuff what's going on with these two cases that you have and, you know, right there with the facts. So as you're thinking about that and you have to move up, and of course, this happens all the time in any kind of organization. Person moves up, they have to be replaced, and sometimes that's difficult. What are you going to be looking for in somebody that would take your spot as Solicitor General, as it's become obvious it's an important position?
I am looking for someone, you know, aside from basically the fundamental skill set of being a great oral advocate and a really good writer, I'm looking for somebody who cares as passionately and deeply as I do about defending the Constitution and defending our state from the encroachment of the federal government on our right to govern ourselves. You know, if they have that, that person has the same foundational drive and North Star that I do, then I think we are going to get along great. In the meantime, I'll still be there. And you may see me up at the podium arguing that big tech case. You know, so I think that I will certainly still be exercising a lot of leadership in this area. But hopefully I'll find somebody that I trust to step into taking over something that I have built from the ground up. So it is kind of my baby and I care a lot about it. I want to see someone who is as passionate about the job as I am with the fundamental skill set to carry out the job.
What kind of, this is the last question. What kind of, you talked about leadership. So what kind of team, and I've said what kind of four times, that was impressive. you're looking to build a team, obviously. There will be people that stay, maybe some people that go, people that get promoted, try something else, whatever. When you think of yourself as a leader, how would you describe yourself and what kind of team are you looking to build?
So, I mean, I think I'd describe myself as basically a common sense conservative who values teamwork, competency, and professionalism. And that will; those are the values that I will look for always in anybody that I bring onto the team. I am willing to take out the garbage if that's what needs to be done. So I never rest on titles, or that's not my job. If that's the job that needs to be done, then I'm willing to go do that job. So I would expect everybody that comes to work for me to do the same thing, to be willing to kind of step in, do whatever's necessary, whatever needs to be done to help promote the team and the win for our state and for our people. So, you know, I look for people who have the right skill set. Competency is important, but professionalism is also very important because we are representing the people of the state when we go into court, when we go into the legislature, if we testify in Congress. I mean, we stand as the voice of the people of Louisiana, and so I want us to always be representing us with competency and professionalism and credibility.
Anything you'd like to say as we wrap up?
Just encourage everybody to go out and vote. It's the most important right that we have, and it ensures that we have the right leadership in place to protect all the other rights. So I would encourage everybody to go out and vote, and let's get this thing done so we can all get to work for the people.
There you go. So thank you, ma'am, for taking the time. I'll let you introduce yourself real quick before I talk about the weird intricacies about early voting, because it's going to be fun this time around. So if you'll introduce yourself real quick.
Oh, just I'm Liz Merle, and I'm running for Attorney General, and it's great to be here in Livingston Parish today, and I'm looking forward to coming back the next time.
Well, yes, ma'am. Thank you for coming out here. So early voting begins this Friday, not Saturday, as it usually does. And that is because Veterans Day is the next weekend. So the way that's going to work out, it's going to start this Friday. Polls are open from 8:30 a.m. to 6 p.m. at the Denham Springs Walker Branch Library or the Registrar of Voters office. They will be closed Sunday, as per usual, and they will be closed the next Friday, which is the 10th. That's the observance of Veterans Day. But they'll be open that next Saturday from 8:30 a.m. to 6 p.m. Again, it's going to be open Friday the 3rd through Saturday the 11th, but Sunday the 5th and Friday the 10th, they will be closed. So hopefully people will remember that. I was asked by our Registrar of Voters and our Clerk of Court to try to hit that home. Then, of course, regular election will be November 18th for the runoff. Polls open at 6 a.m. They close at 8 p.m. If you are in line, you are allowed to vote. But please try to get out there early. Those folks have had a long day, those election workers, so they're probably ready to go home probably well before 8 p.m. We appreciate you joining us. This is the Livingston Parish News Weekly Show. My name is McHugh David, publisher and editor of the news. Please remember the news is on Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, Instagram, and YouTube. Once a week in print on Thursdays. That's $7 a month to get that in your mailbox. And we are online, www.livingstonparishnews.com. I want to thank this lady one more time for taking the time to stop by. I want to thank you guys for watching, and we'll see you next time.